everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Matt Neely. Good to see Matt. It's been a long time since Matt was engineering and producing the Buckmaster Show, but we're glad to have Matt on the other side of the glass as we are off and running. And the earliest, pretty much, I think we're going to go down into the weather history books as the earliest start to our summer rainy season, aka monsoon. And talk about the overnight difference. We go from the desert to felt like Acapulco this morning as I went out to the car. We're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, the naming rights. I'm glad they do have them. We love Green Things. And this is part of a growing presence, our radio station, the Bustos Media Company. 5 radio stations now under one roof. Our latest acquisition is The Drive, a very popular station. Glad they're here. But this one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. And we have our live streaming for our radio program on my website, buckmastershow.com, which very proud of the fact that we have a very extensive archive of programs going back to when we first launched the program the first week in January 2011. And very easy to use the archive at buckmastershow.com. Our radio show now 13 and a half years on the radio, and prior to that, 22 years over on Channel 6. So that puts us at about 36 and a half years here in Tucson Media. Our media partners, some of our friends that prominently display the Buckmaster Show logo with a link to my website, Dylan Smith and his team at TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Saharita's son, Dan Shear. And our latest media partner is Tucson Agenda. Joining me in our conversation on Friday, we like to bring in a co-anchor, co-host, someone from the media. And it's my first chance to meet Ellie Wolf, who covers higher education for the Arizona Daily Star. Ellie was with my buddy Tim Steller while I was away for a couple of weeks ago. She did a great job on her first appearance here on the show, but now she's with me. Hey, Ellie, thank you for coming.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Our Friday Focus interview with Tom Horn. Mr. Horn, Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction since 2023, previously the same title, same position, 2003 to 2011. A Republican, Mr. Horn was Arizona's Attorney General from 2011 to 2015. And he is on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Superintendent, how are you today?
I'm great, Bill, and it's always been great to be on your show, whether TV or radio, going back many years.
Yeah, I think I was just telling Ellie, who's been now here in town about a year, I was telling her that you would come down very often from the Capitol, when you're superintendent, and then as Attorney General, we're doing the TV show. So we go back a long way, don't we, Tom?
Yeah, we go back to 2003, about 20 years.
Yeah, about 20 years. Okay, this budget, with all this red ink, how is it going to impact Arizona public education?
Well, the schools have been exempted from there's a 4% cut that all the agencies have taken, including my agency, but the schools have been exempted, so they'll get the same amount of money they normally do.
So that is not an issue?
The cut is not an issue for the schools. They need more than they're getting. I've always advocated that we need to fund our schools better, especially we need to get our teachers' salaries up. We're now losing more teachers than are coming into the classroom. So if we didn't turn that around eventually, that would mean we had no teachers. You can imagine that. So, we do need when there's now there's a deficit, so we can't do anything right now. Except there's something on the ballot this coming year to use more money from the land trust, which has a lot more money than we ever thought it would to help teacher salaries. So that's a good thing. But when we have more of a surplus, we need to do much better for our teachers.
Here's Ellie Wolf from the Star.
Can you speak a little bit towards the cuts to the Arizona Teachers Academy, which is a program by the Arizona Board of Regents that allows Arizona students who wish to become teachers, gives them a guaranteed job after graduation, and it helps pay for their tuition while they're university students?
That's a tough cut because we need more teachers. That's, you know, every effort we make to increase our number of teachers is very, very important. There are too many classrooms in our state now where we don't have trained teachers. We have permanent substitutes, and they don't have the training necessary. Especially, you know, I heard of one school where all the first grade teachers were permanent substitutes. Well, that's where the kids learn to read, and you need a lot of training to properly teach reading. So we've got to turn this around, and so that's going to hurt.
Speaking of money, Dr. Don Wells, who's the research director at the Grand Canyon Institute, the think tank based in Phoenix, nonpartisan, kind of broke some big news on my program, Superintendent Horn, a couple of weeks ago, saying that by his calculations, the voucher program, which of course you're a huge supporter of, the annual cost to taxpayers is $777 million. What's your reaction?
Well, I think he's made the same mistake that some people in the governor's office made when they first started charging the ESA program as contributing significantly to the deficit. Actually, it doesn't contribute to it at all because they didn't account for the offset. We're giving students in the ESA program $7,400. If they were in public schools, we'd be paying about $13,000 per student, and they didn't account for that offset. Now, we have about 74,000 students in ESAs. We have 1,250,000 in the public schools. So it's a tiny percentage. It's not a threat to the public schools. But what it does do is it gives parents an opportunity to deal with a situation where a student's needs might not be being met. We have people that have, say, three kids. Two of them are doing just fine in public school, but one, the third one, his needs are not being met, and the parents have the ability to put him in another school where his needs are being met. It's hard for me to understand why anybody would be so heartless as to say they can't do that, except for ideology.
Well, there's the worry about accountability. And some of the district, Scottsdale's been a lot of people at Scottsdale using that. And folks would say, well, why do people in Scottsdale, a wealthy area, why do they need this program, Tom Horn?
Well, not all of Scottsdale is wealthy, actually. There's a part of it that is, but there are large sections that are not. I think the legislature made the decision to have this open to everybody because everybody pays taxes. But there's been a trend over time where more and more of the people who get into the program are at the lower economic levels. And I personally am making a big effort to appeal to the people at the lower economic levels. I have a lot of ads on Spanish stations in Spanish. People are shocked to hear me talking in Spanish. And I think the trend is more away from the initial thing, which was that parents with more money were more up on the news and were more likely to use it. The trend is away from that right now.
All right, let's bring Ellie Wolf back into the conversation. Go ahead, Ellie.
Yeah, speaking of money paid by taxpayers, one thing that I'm really interested in is your opposition to the dual language program. Your suit was just struck down. You say you're going to appeal, and I think taxpayers are going to be on the hook for paying $120,000 worth of legal fees because you sued us in your official capacity. Can you update us a little bit on that appeal and why you remain staunch in your belief against these dual language programs?
Sure. There are two factors. One is the law should be followed. The other is it's better for the academic success of the student. So let me talk about both of those. In the year 2000, the voters overwhelmingly passed an initiative that said students who are learning English should be taught English by being taught in English and English language classrooms. So that is clear language prohibiting dual language or bilingual education. My two predecessors, I first took office in 2003, were not enforcing it. I was the first one to enforce it. At that time, we had bilingual everywhere, and a pathetic 4% of the students became proficient in English in 1 year. At that rate, most of them would never become proficient, and they would fail in the economy. I introduced structured English immersion, and even more important, a program to train teachers as to how to do structured English immersion, because it requires special skills. We got the rate of students becoming proficient in English up to 31% in 1 year. At that rate, 3 or 4 years, almost everyone becomes proficient. And a very extensive study that was done in a magazine called Education Next. Your listeners can look it up, educationnext.org, and look up the name of the author, Joseph Guzman. If they put in that name, the article will appear. And he found that students who had been in structured English immersion outperformed students who had been in bilingual education by every factor you measured: graduation from high school, entry into college, average income, and in an entry into high status professions, the ones that had been in structured English immersion outperformed the ones that had been in bilingual by almost 2-1. And then after I took office, we did another study, an updated study, and we compared apples with apples. So we took the top 5 school districts with structured English immersion, the top 5 school districts that had gone to dual language in my absence after I left office. The dual language started making a comeback. And there was a difference of 5-1 in proficiency rates, comparing apples to apples, the best structured English immersion district versus the best dual language district, and so on down the line. So it's clearly the best for the students' academic success. That they need to learn English quickly so they can go in the regular classroom and succeed academically. And at 3 hours a day, in a dual language, it's just not enough to learn English and get into a regular classroom. There was a professor in the Midwest who did a time on task study, paid for by the federal government, and he concluded the more time students spend learning something, the more of it they learn. And his mother said to him, "You needed a federally funded study to tell you that?" You're supposed to laugh at that one. So it's common sense. If you're learning English all day long, you're going to learn it much more quickly than if it's for 3 hours and the rest of the school day plus the other 24 hours at home is all in Spanish. You're not going to learn English quickly enough to succeed academically. So if you think in terms of the academic success of the students, and what we all should have is respect for the law. We need to have structured English immersion. And there's a lawsuit being brought at this point. The judge never reached the substance of our argument. She said that the legislature had authorized certain departments of government to sue and be sued, and Department of Education wasn't one of them. This is when I wasn't in office. I wasn't there to lobby for it. I thought I had implied authority to do that because I'd been given a lot of duties in supervising the teaching of English language learners. And so we've appealed that. But meanwhile, under the initiative itself, a parent of a student in Arizona could sue any district that is violating that, and that lawsuit is now pending.
Ellie, you have a follow-up here before we take the break.
I do. So I'm going to cite some data that's been in a recent Arizona Republic article, and that is Arizona is the only state in the nation that still has an English-only immersion law on the books, and the grad rate for English learners in Arizona is the lowest in the country. They say students who already speak English in dual language programs also score higher on reading and math proficiency tests than students in regular classrooms. And the sort of amendment to that proposition from the early 2000s passed in 2019 with bipartisan unanimous support in both legislative chambers. So it seems to me that there is kind of a mandate from lawmakers, and there is the data to back this up, that maybe that proposition isn't as popular as perhaps it once was when it passed in the early 2000s. I mean, we know that California and Massachusetts used to have those a similar law and then ended up repealing it. So my question is, you know, now that it seems like data backs up that maybe this, or more recent data backs up that maybe this isn't the right choice, you still seem pretty steadfast in your support.
Yeah, no, the data clearly shows that the students do better academically if they've been in structured English immersion. I gave you some of that data. The obedience to law is an important thing. The law that was passed by the legislature didn't say one word about dual language or bilingual. It just said that the State Board of Education could pass models. And it was the State Board of Education, when I was not in office, under the influence of my Democrat predecessor, that included dual language. But the legislation did not authorize that specifically. They just told them to come up with models. Regardless of that, a voter-passed initiative takes precedence over everything. The legislature can't contradict it. The governor can't contradict it. I can't contradict it. I have to enforce the will of the voters. Nobody can overrule an initiative passed by the voters. So even if the legislature had passed permission for dual language, which they did not do, you could look at the statute and there's not one word of dual language or bilingual. But even if they had, that would have been unconstitutional because the legislature cannot pass a law that violates a voter-passed initiative.
All right, we're going to pause right here with Tom Horn, Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction. Ellie Wolf is with us, covering education for the Arizona Daily Star. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, when we do our telephone interviews, and we're doing our interview with Tom Horn telephonically. So that's presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in studio is Ellie Wolf, and Ellie has been doing a great job in her year at the Arizona Daily Star, mainly covering higher education, but outstanding reporter, and we're glad to have her here in Tucson. On the live line, Tom Horn, Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction. The Arizona Republic looked at a bunch of emails from your office, Mr. Horn and Superintendent Horn, and they found that your office didn't communicate in a timely manner with school districts concerning federal reductions. Funding reductions in federal funding. Have you been transparent with all the districts?
Totally. That was a completely false story. Don't believe everything you read in the Republic.
okay.
You know, to on our last topic, the column you quoted from had the facts all wrong. I wrote a response and submitted it, and they refused to run it because they were afraid to let the readers see both sides. So I wouldn't use the Republic as a source. And in fact, their headline of that story and their first paragraph said that I had cut Title I funding,
yes,
which was completely false. I never cut any funding. I have no right to do it. I have no desire to do it. I would want funding to be more rather than less. It's the federal government that cut the funding. And when we got the notice from the federal, So their story was completely false from the headline and the first paragraph, outrageously false. Now, when we got the notice from the federal government, we passed it on to the schools. And a lot of the schools, and what we told them was, the federal government has warned us there could be cuts, partly because we have a lower lower poverty rate relative to other states than we had in the past, which I suppose could be good news. And so what we said to the schools was, in the past, you know, prior to getting the actual numbers from the federal government, you've had an estimate and you've committed to 90% of that estimate. We think you should only commit to 80% because you don't want to make commitments that you can't meet. And we're warned by the federal government that there may be cuts. We communicated that to all the districts and the charter schools. As it turned out, some districts were cut by 15%. So when we said, you know, commit to 80% rather than 90%, there were a lot of objections from the districts. You know, we need that money and so on. Of course, we need the money, but I have to pass on the information from the federal government. Had we not done that, and had they committed to 90%, they would have had 5% commitment that they could not meet. So the communications we made with the districts were very important in saving them from a problem that stemmed from the federal government.
How is your relationship with the reporters at the Arizona Republic?
Some of them great, but not this particular one.
Here's Ellie Wolf, reporter for the Arizona Daily Star. Go ahead, Ellie.
So I have a question about your role on the Arizona Board of Regents. For listeners that don't know, the Arizona Board of Regents is a non-elected board with 8-year terms nominated by the governor that oversees the 3 state universities. Now, the governor and the state superintendent do have places on that board. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the University of Arizona's financial crisis? And do you think that University of Arizona President Robert Robbins should step down immediately like the United Campus Workers Union is calling for?
No, I don't think so. They've come up with a good plan to solve the deficit, and they have the cash to meet their bills and will have the cash to meet their bills. So the problem is in the process of being solved. Is it the president of the university that you're asking me whether he should resign now?
Yes, the president of the university.
Yeah, well, we have to find a replacement for him. So it wouldn't make sense for him to resign before we find a replacement. And I think there's been a lot of unfair attacks on him. I've been present at state board meetings where we have called to the public and people came to the meetings and attacked him in what I thought was a very unfair way. And I was shocked at the sadism and the irrational speech of some of the people who were attacking him.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the people that do have criticisms of him and the board itself, right? They're saying that the board, which is responsible for overseeing the universities, let the University of Arizona kind of walk into this deficit, which currently stands at $163 million. They announced just yesterday at the board meeting that their cash reserves are down $50 million for next year. And while it does seem like, you know, they do have a plan in place to hopefully get out of that in the next couple of years, a lot of staff, especially on the union, faculty and staff are concerned about, you know, immense layoffs. What's your response to that?
Well, I think the plan that was presented is very good, and it's going to take care of the deficit, and they will have the cash to pay all their bills. So saying their cash is down, I think, is not relevant where they're solving the deficit and they will have the cash to pay their bills. So I don't buy that. And as I say, I think that the crazy, irrational attacks made at that public meeting reflected much more badly on the people who made the attacks.
You are about halfway through your term. Give yourself a report card right now on how you're doing. You're in the education business. We'll talk a little bit about report cards. How is Tom Horn, 2 years through this four-year term, doing right now?
Okay, it's a year and a half, but yes, okay. I will be happy to do that. Okay. I have one obsession, and that is to help the schools improve academic performance. I'm talking about the public schools now. 90% of my time and effort and those of the department go into helping the public schools do better academically. The press like to talk about the controversies, which is understandable. It makes more interesting reading. But the real story is what are we doing to help the schools? And this is the public schools. You know, the ESA is a small part of the picture, but it's been controversial, so it gets written about. So what have I been doing? I actually have 16 initiatives to help the schools do better academically. So I'll give you a few examples. You obviously don't have time for all 16, but I'll I'll give you a couple of examples. So okay. we have what we call improvement teams. These are teams of first-rate teachers and principals who go out and help the schools do better. Under my immediate predecessors, I got the information that they just sat in judgment of the schools and they weren't doing anything to help them. Part of our mission statement is that we're a service organization. We want to help the organization, and we're sending out these improvement teams. We were hoping to double the number of schools that got the benefit of this, and the word got around as to how effective we were, and we actually tripled the number of schools. We have a full division of the department dedicated to training leadership, because leadership is everything. George Washington said, "I'd rather have an army of lambs led by a lion than an army of lions led by a lamb." And so we have very extensive training that we're doing of principals, superintendents, and so on. And that training has, again, the word got around, and we've had to much increase the number of sessions that we hold because the demand has been so great. After every session, we asked them, "Would you recommend this training to others?" And in every case, it was 100% said yes. So we're doing a massive job in helping the leaders be better leaders in their schools. We have a program to prepare students. Our mission in part is every student graduates either college or career ready. So Arizona has a lot of great companies, but the heads of the companies are complaining that there's a shortage of skilled workers. So we have a massive program called the Arizona Education Economic Council. We've gotten all the largest companies in Arizona involved, where the deal is we will see to it that they get the trained workers. In return, they'll let us know what skills are needed to get high-paying jobs with them right out of high school. And some of these companies, like TSMC, which is the company that makes those little chips, a student right out of high school, if they got the proper training, could make $70,000. So, I could recite all 16 initiatives you don't want me to. Anybody who's interested can contact us, and we'll give them a list of all.
Yeah, we're quickly running out of time. So what would the letter grade be, Tom Horn, for your first year and a half through? What are you going to give yourself?
After a very serious consideration, I would say an A.
Not an A minus or A plus, just a solid A.
Solid A, I think it probably doesn't surprise you.
Okay. Any final thoughts, Mr. Horn? We're going to have to wrap it up. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I just want to emphasize that, 90% of my time and energy and that of our department is dedicated to helping our public schools get better academic results. We've got a very solid focus on that, and I think that's the job we should be doing. And I have a great team. I have the best executive team that I've ever seen. It's a pleasure to go to work every day and work with them. And I think we're doing what we should be doing.
When school starts in August, are we going to see, though, still a lot of substitutes and in the classroom? You said that some of these kids in the kindergarten, all they know are substitutes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the answer is yes. I strongly backed a proposal that was before the legislature last year when there was a surplus to give every teacher a $10,000 raise, which would have put us in the top 10 states for beginning salaries. Unfortunately, it did not pass, and that was very frustrating. But, I'm doing everything I can, but I need the legislature and the governor to act. They need to raise teacher salaries. We need to get administrators to support teachers better on discipline, because we survey the teachers who leave the classroom, and a close second to salaries is frustration that teachers are not getting the support they need from administrators on discipline, and nobody wants to teach in a classroom where the kids get away with a lot of misbehavior and you have anarchy. I had a proposal to do away with having kids scroll through their cell phones while a teacher's trying to teach them. It passed the legislature, and the governor vetoed it, which to me is completely irrational. I don't know why anybody would want a teacher to have to teach a class with kids scrolling through their cell phones. So if you get a chance to interview her, you ought to find out why in the world she would ever do something like that.
You can't do like say that schools cannot use, kids can't use cell phones in the classroom. That has to be a local decision, correct?
Right now it's a local decision, and there are too many districts that have school boards that are not sufficiently academically oriented, that haven't done it, and your listeners need to pay attention to who's running for school boards and get academically oriented school board members. But we passed a law through the legislature that would have required all the districts to come up with policies on this, and unfortunately the governor vetoed it.
All right, we're going to have to leave it right there. Tom Horn, thank you very much. We'll catch up with you certainly after school starts here in the fall. Thank you.
It's fun being with you. It's always fun being with you, Bill.
Thank you very much. Tom Horn, Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction, our Friday Focus interview today. We're going to have Ellie Wolf stick around. She's had practically every day a front page story this week. I want to touch on some of those stories right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. A little bit of Steely Dan there, bridging us into segment number three, thanks to Matt Neely behind the glass today. Tom Fairbanks had a few air conditioning issues. You don't want air conditioning issues right now, but anyway, it's good to have Matt with me on the show today. It's also good to have Ellie Wolf here. Ellie's doing just such a great job. Matt's giving you a little applause there, Ellie, on the other side of the glass.
Absolutely.
He's very, very happy with, I think a lot of this community is happy. At least you're out there and you're reporting every day. You're working real hard. And today, your story above the fold, that means like the top, front page. And you alluded to this in our interview, thanks to Mr. Horn. We thank Tom Horn for our Friday Focus interview. You say that the cash reserves have dropped by about $50 million at the UA. Where does that put them, Ellie, overall right now?
So cash-wise, they went from about $550 million in cash reserves to $500 million in cash reserves for this coming year. Their days cash on hand is 67 days. Now the Arizona Board of Regents requires that the three public universities have at least 140 days cash on hand. So they're definitely below that. And Northern Arizona University, I think, has 173. And ASU has someplace in the 160s. So they're both flying very high above the UA right now.
What does Mr. President Robbins say the reason for the drop is?
So they haven't given kind of a clear-cut reason, and the interim CFO, John Arnold, who was formerly executive director of the Arizona Board of Regents, and he's actually starting a new position at the UA as the first ever chief operating officer starting July 1.
He's parlayed into, he's got a position now.
yes, with quite a pay bump as well.
Yeah.
And what he told the Regents yesterday is that he would, quote, very much like it to stop at $500 million. And so he doesn't see
stop the bleeding at $500 million?
Yes. Okay. And so he doesn't see right now it dipping ever below $500 million in terms of cash reserves.
John Arnold's been around a long time. I mean, I can remember back in the day, that's where a little bit of this institutional memory comes in. He was very much associated with the Arizona legislature. So, I mean, he didn't get off the bus yesterday, but so let me ask you the situation over at the athletic department. They announced they've got all sorts of red ink too. Are these related, these issues?
Yeah. So the university made loans to the athletics department over a couple years, totaling just under $90 million. And to be fair, the athletic issues facing the University of Arizona are not unusual. A lot of big universities struggle with athletics being independent and being able to kind of financially sustain itself. And in fact, over at ASU, President Michael Crow just basically forgave a bunch of loans that the university gave to the athletics department. Mm-hmm. So the UA has paid a lot to its athletics department.
How is the presidential search going? That was a good question to Mr. Horn, Superintendent Horn, because he is on the Arizona Board of Regents. I mean, he's in those personnel meetings, and he says that the plan, from what his answer to your question, he thinks the plan is good. The plan to find a new president, and you've been covering that. How are they doing in the search?
Right. So for listeners, just a brief catch up. The University of Arizona President Robbins said he would resign by June 2026. But the search firm that the UA has hired says that they're moving with kind of rapid speed, and that they're already talking to candidates, and even members of the Board of Regents are already talking to candidates. They've just published their position profile a couple weeks ago, which makes no mention of the deficit. They say that they want to talk about the deficit currently facing the UA, which is $162 million, to candidates in person and have kind of a phone or in-person conversation about that instead of putting it on their materials. But right now they say that the search is moving quickly and that they're excited about the candidates.
Well, they may not say anything about the deficit in the written material, but I just can't imagine a presidential hopeful not doing a little research and saying, you know, I don't know if I want to go out there to Tucson. It's like the engine in an automobile, it's got a few issues, and do I want to buy that used car with all those problems? So who knows, but this obviously is going to be, I would think, in when they do start the conversations, going to be like topic number one. I mean, mm-hmm. Look what's happening with the red ink there. And, you know, how is it looking for layoffs? Are there going to be layoffs at the university? And there already have been some, right?
Yeah, so there have been layoffs, and it's been really hard to track, honestly, uh-huh. because they aren't coming all on one day. They aren't sitting everyone down. It's more of a unit-by-unit situation. And in fact, John Arnold has alluded that, you know, we could hear of layoffs continuing for a year or two as the university works to centralize various offices and departments, and as they kind of continue tracking their financial progress.
You had a piece that was very troubling about anti-Semitism on the University of Arizona campus, and kind of the takeaway, at least for me, was that you've got students over there, Jewish students, who are really worried about, not worried, they're in some cases really terrified of their safety.
Yeah, so there were two pro-Palestinian encampments at the University of Arizona, both which led to arrests, which led to police officers shooting at protesters with rubber bullets and tear gas. And it's hard because I think in a lot of cases, these universities can't win with their responses, right? The pro-Palestinian students are angry that they were responded to violently from mm-hmm. the police. And Jewish students who are pro-Israel, right? Not all Jewish students are pro-Israel, but those that are feel as though the fact that these encampments happened at all was anti-Semitic, who feel uncomfortable with some of the things that members of the encampments were shouting. Right? Like, there's all this debate right now about that phrase, from the river to the sea, whether or not that's anti-Semitic or not. So there's been a lot of debates, and when it's the way that someone feels that they're being treated, especially about, you know, their religion, their race, their gender, it's hard to dictate that.
Going back to sports, something came up about the provider of some of their coverage that handles some of their coverage, one of the nationwide providers. U of A has broken relationship with that provider. Would that is there any indication that U of A would just go it alone and not have a national sports provider for media coverage?
That's a good question. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure. Our sports team is excellent and probably has a million articles on this. But
I'm just wondering if it goes back. I would guess it goes back to the red ink issue.
Yeah, I mean, athletics is at this very interesting turning point at the UA because of the financial deficit, but also because, you know, University of Arizona and ASU are switching leagues.
They're joining a new conference. And yeah, it's a crossroads time, certainly for athletics. Before you go, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Ellie Wolf, where you're from and where you went to school.
I'm originally from Massachusetts, Western Massachusetts by Vermont, a little town called Northampton. And I went to college in Maine at a small liberal arts college called Bates College. Go Bobcats. And I interned at a couple papers in Maine. And then this past summer, I was a Metro reporting intern at the Boston Globe, where I focused on higher education coverage. And I graduated from Bates last year in 2023 with a degree in history.
Tucson is an acquired taste for many people, including myself, when I first came out here from Chicago to go to school. In the mid-60s, there was a time there that first fall, I was ready to get the heck out of town. I missed the autumn in Chicago. But anyway, Tucson grows on you, and I'm sure it has already on you, right?
Yeah, I love Tucson. I love the community here. I love the culture. I love living in a totally different part of the country. And I'm really grateful because my coworkers and my editors at the Arizona Daily Star are amazing and have been incredible mentors and are real experts in the Tucson community.
All right, Ellie Wolf, keep up the good work at the Arizona Daily Star. Thanks for having you on the show. We'll have you on again.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take our break right here. Dan Gibson is off today for his weekend watch, but our friend Jim Nintzel from TucsonSentinel.com is waiting on the live line, waiting in the wings to tell us what's going on this weekend with Weekend Watch. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's Metropolitan Planning Organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance.
Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. And away we go. Stir it up. That means the weekend is upon us. Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's in the mid-70s right now over in Silver City. We like to say it's 10 degrees cooler for sure this time of year. And it pretty much holds up. Usually it's 10, but it can even go to 20 degrees cooler. They're having some pretty nice weather over there, so it'd be a great weekend, actually, to take that three-hour drive over to Silver City. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org, a great starting place before you make that approximate three-hour drive over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Our Weekend Watch reporter Dan Gibson off today, but ably ready to fill in. Our friend Jim Ninsel from the Tucson Sentinel is with us. Actually, Jim is on the live line from San Diego, I believe. Hey, Jim.
Hey, actually, I'm out in Anaheim.
What?
At the Investigative Reporters and Editors Conference that we're having out here. I had to leave. My kids couldn't believe that I was leaving them behind and going to Disneyland without them. They were a little upset, but so it goes.
What's going on this weekend, even though you're going to be talking to us from afar about Tucson?
Yes, indeed. Well, there's a lot going on. I heard you got some rain yesterday, and summer is here, and there's a summer solstice going on, a little celebration of that. Crooked Tooth Brewery, I know that you're aware, Bill, of how vibrant our local brewery scene is.
Oh, yeah.
All these different little small batch brews coming out of Tucson. And Crooked Tooth does something a little special. They try to do a little bit of magic in their brew. They brew them during full moons. They put some crystals into the mix somehow.
What?
And they I think there's some spell, some sort of witchcraft going into these beers.
Something strange.
It's only natural that they would be celebrating the summer solstice there at Crooked Tooth, which is at 228 South 6th Street, right off of 4th Avenue. And they're going to have a candle painting workshop at 1:20 on Saturday. And then they're going to have some live music from Natalie Pahanic from 8 to 10. And basically just a celebration of the magic of summer, I guess.
Well, there is something to celebrate certainly this year, because this is one of the earliest starts, Jim Ninsel, on record to our summer rainy season, a.k.a. monsoon.
Yeah, I hear you got a little hammered yesterday.
Some areas did, yeah. Some areas did. I think we got a few drops at the Buckmaster Bungalow, but the humidity levels are up there, and it is definitely monsoon time. What else you got for us, Jim Ninsel?
Oh, you know, this isn't this weekend, but on Thursday, June 27th, there's a global music dance party that's going to feature some Ethiopian funk, some African disco, Afrobeat music, Latin, Brazilian. It's all going on from 8 to 11 p.m. at the new Z Street Ethiopian Market. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Bill, but Zeman's Ethiopian restaurant
has
expanded to a number of other efforts down there on that Sunshine Mile that's just been redone, and one of the things they have is kind of a coffee house and bar, and they're going to be doing a big dance party on Thursday night from 8 to 11 p.m.
All right, Jim Nintzel, thank you very much. Have fun over in Southern California. Talk to you soon.
Sounds great.
Thanks a lot, Jim Nintzel. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. On behalf of everybody here at Bustos Media and KVOI, hope you have a great weekend.